නමෝ භගවතේ වාසුදේවාය ඕම් නමෝ භගවතේ වාසුදේවාය ඕම් නමෝ භගවතේ වාසුදේවාය Text 18. It's pretty short. Tata agnidraye mishra kalayavatarisyami atmatulyam anupala bhamanaha. Tata agnidrehi mishra kalayavatarisyami atmatulyam anupala bhamanaha. Tata agnidriye mishya kalayavatarisyami atmatulya anupala bhamanaha. Tata, therefore, agnidre, in the wife of Nabi, the son of Agnidra, amsi kalaya, By my expansion of my personal form, avatarishyami, I shall advent myself, atmatulyam, my equal, anupala bhamanaha, not finding. Someone like to try the verse? Anyone? Translation? Oh, go ahead. Please. Mata, any Mataji? Since I cannot find anyone equal to me, I shall personally expand myself into a plenary portion, and thus advent myself in the womb of Marudevi, the wife of Maharaj Nabi, the son of Agnidra. Purport. By His Divine Grace. A.C. Bhaktivedanta, Srila Prabhupada. This is an example of the omnipotence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Although He is one without a second, He expands Himself by Svamsha, His personal expansion, and sometimes by Bhivanamsha, or His separated expansion. Lord Vishnu herein agrees to send His personal expansion as the son of Marudevi, the wife of Maharaj Nabi, who is the son of Agnidra. The Ritvija, the priests, knew that God is one, yet they prayed for the Supreme Lord to become the son of Maharaj Nabi, to let the world know that the absolute truth, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is one without a second. When He incarnates, He expands Himself in different potencies. Since I cannot find anyone equal to me, I shall personally expand myself into a plenary portion and thus advent myself in the womb of Marudevi, the wife of Maharaj Nabi, the son of Agnidra. Om Magya Nata Marandasya Ganagana Shalakaya Chakshu Unmilitam Jainatasma Shigrev Namaha. I offer my humble obeisances to the lotus feet of my spiritual master, who's opened my eyes, blinded by the darkness of ignorance, with the torchlight of knowledge. And for those of you on Saturday morning who've come and haven't had the benefit of hearing this progression in this chapter. We are actually speaking of, I wasn't here either, but anyway, I kind of remembered that Maharaj Nibi was wanting to have a son to carry forward the propagation of the species in the universe. He saw it as Dharma, and he wanted to have a son very much like the, exactly like the personality of Godhead. And the priests were performing a great sacrifice in order to obtain this boon, although they were a little ashamed that he was asking for the Lord's benediction for his son, because they understood that one should ultimately not be asking for service from the Lord, but one should be in service to the Lord. But that's a higher stage of advancement in bhakti yoga, to which we all, myself particularly, aspire. I was just remarking yesterday that when we pray for different protections, or in, such as driving in the car, the person in the back seat of the car yesterday was saying, "The Lord will protect you. Your name is Nrisingananda. The Lord will protect you in the form of Lord Nrisinga." I said, "He may be protecting me, but he's given me a seatbelt to put on. Why should I bother him so much if I can simply put a seatbelt on? I can serve the Lord in that way. That I can try to protect myself and not bother the Lord for prayers for protection." Oh, he understood like that. Of course, the Lord has given us such ample opportunity to be of service to him. Even we can protect this temple, which is this body, to be of service to the Lord. So in that way, we're not thinking, "Oh Lord, protect me, or give me a son, or I want this particular type of devotional service, or I need some money, Krishna will provide." Krishna provides, but as the old song says, you don't always get what you're after, you get what you need. So in relation to this verse, I wanted to read part of one purport from the Bhagavad Gita and the Yoga of the Supreme Person, chapter 15, because there's a very interesting distinction made in this purport by Srila Prabhupada, that there are two expansions. He has a personal expansion, and then he has the Vibhinamsa, which is his separated expansion. Srila Prabhupada brought to light, particularly to Westerners, because you have some culture in this area, the distinction between Krishna expanding himself in a plenary fashion and Krishna having expanded himself as a separated jivatma. Avibhamansa is a jiva soul. Vishnu Tattva is his expansion. And that's how we can understand how the Lord participates in coming into the womb of Meru Devi, or in expanding himself from Balaram, Sankarshan, Aniruddha, into the material Tattva, the Mahavishnu, the Garbhadakshay Vishnu, the Shiradakshay Vishnu. These are all Vishnu Tattvas. We're the marginal energy. You can compare it to like where the tide, the waves come on the sand. Sometimes the wave is covering the sand, and sometimes the wave is not covering the sand. So we're the tishta, the marginal potency of the Lord. We're this separated energy, but only separated in the sense that we are choosing not to be of service in our constitutional position. Yesterday, I was visiting in Pune the MIT, which is the home of the World Peace Foundation. They are very they're very active in promoting world peace through the unity of God as one. So they're trying to take all the drops of the ocean, the separated drops, and say that all of the drops, actually each of the drop is an ocean in and of itself, because God is one. This was promoted by Janeshwar prior to Tukaram's arrival for the most of his life, that one, you know, the Brahman realization is the highest realization. And so they picked up from that. Although they also understand Tukaram's great bhakti and devotion, but still it's eluding a little bit their understanding that Krishna is always personal and always individual, just like we are. Never was there a time, Krishna says, when you did not exist, when he's speaking to Arjuna, nor all these kings, nor in the future will there ever be a time when you do not exist. So he's speaking, first of all, as an individual to Arjuna. Just like I was talking to Bhavananda the other day, and he told me a story that Prabhupada recited to him. He said that this was 1969, and Prabhupada told him that Krishna had asked him, "You please go to the material world and you do some work for me there. You bring some souls back home, back to Godhead." Prabhupada told Bhavananda, he says, "And I said to Krishna, 'Oh, no, that is a horrible place. I cannot go there.'" And Krishna says, "No, I'm requesting you, please go, and you help these conditioned souls come back to Godhead." And again, Prabhupada told Bhavananda that he told Krishna, "No, it's such a horrible place. I don't want to go there." But of course, as the good servant, Prabhupada did come, and he brought us this very important distinction. That was completely absent from anywhere else other than some places in India. Completely absent. The distinction between the Vishnu Tattva and the Vibhinamsa, the separated entity. Just like the sun, sometimes it's covered by the clouds. So you think there's no sun, but the sun's there. It's just covered by the clouds. So Krishna is there. He's always in his personal form. But sometimes we don't understand that. And it takes a messenger, a pure devotee of Krishna, to deliver that message at the time and choosing of Krishna's own sweet will. So from the 15th chapter, 7th verse, "Mamam tvanso jivaloke jiva bhuta sinatanaha mana shansta dhiryani prakriti shtani karshati." The living entities in this conditioned world are my eternal fragmental parts. Due to conditioned life, they're struggling very hard with the six senses, which include the mind. In this verse, the identity of the living being is clearly given. The living entity is the fragmental part and parcel of the Supreme Lord eternally. It's not that he assumes individuality in his conditional life and in his liberated state becomes one with the Supreme Lord. He is eternally fragmented. Reminds me, when I was speaking yesterday, I kept saying Krishna consciousness, Krishna consciousness. And some devotees have recommended it. Well, in India, you know, you really want to speak about, you know, to certain types of people about bhakti. You know, it's really bhakti yoga and the cult of bhakti, of devotion. But devotion to whom? You know, that can be very misleading. If I'm just talking about bhakti, well, you know, bhakti to the all-pervading Brahman, the all-pervading omnipotent, from which we will eventually merge. So I preferred yesterday. I kept saying in the I was in a group of very important people. I kept saying Krishna consciousness, you know, because that's how Prabhupada gave it to us. He didn't give it to us. Of course, he referred to it as bhakti yoga. But just like in New York, when he was advised by that lawyer, why don't you make your society the International Society for God Consciousness? No, there's so many God conscious societies. This is Krishna consciousness, you know. So I didn't want to mince my words in the context of being in this very illustrious company yesterday. Somehow or another, nobody objected. But, you know, I kept saying, yes, we have to, because we're talking about promoting, making a film about Tukaram, and I kept saying Tukaram was very Krishna conscious. You know, and I didn't know if it was going to go over well, but it seemed to. It's not that he assumes individuality in this conditional life, and in his liberated state becomes one with the Supreme Lord. He's eternally fragmented. It's clearly said, Sanatanaha, according to the Vedic version, the Supreme Lord manifests and expands himself in innumerable expansions, of which the primary are called Vishnu Tattva, and the secondary are called the living entities. That's the Vibhimamsa. The living entities, not only the human beings and the cats and dogs, but even the greater controllers of the material world, including Brahma, Lord Shiva, are all parts and parcels of the Supreme Lord. They are all eternal, not temporary manifestations. The word karshati, struggling or grappling hard, is very significant. The conditioned soul is bound up as though shackled by iron chains. He's bound up by the false ego, and the mind is the chief agent which is driving him in this material existence. And when the mind is in the mode of goodness, his activities are good. When the mind is in the mode of passion, his activities are troublesome. And when the mind is in the mode of ignorance, he travels in the lower species of life. It's clear, however, in this verse that the conditioned soul is covered by the material body with the mind and senses, and when he's liberated, this material covering perishes, but his spiritual body manifests itself in its individual capacity. We're all familiar with the story of how Lord Brahma was illusioned, and when he stole the cowherd boys. Imagine. The greatest living entity in this material manifestation, and he's illusioned that he thinks that he can be greater and somehow than Krishna, that little blue boy who's playing in the cowherd with the cowherd boys, or Lord Indra himself, who has to pray to the Lord for forgiveness for becoming illusioned himself. And so many different, even Lord Shiva, who is mesmerized by the Mohini form of the Lord, and realized that ultimately Krishna was his supreme Lord and protector. In all these circumstances, these intelligent, super intelligent, you know, we have supercomputers, these are super intelligent living entities with huge brain capacities, and they're illusioned. So we think to ourselves, you know, what chance do I have? I was speaking with Aniruddha after Guru Puja, before Guru Puja, and was saying, Prabhu, you've been a devotee. He was saying, you've been a devotee for 35, 40 years. You know, you must be very advanced. If so much, you know, to stay with it that long. I've only been a devotee 8 years. Well, first of all, every year, every month, every week, every day, I think to myself, how can I increase my sense gratification? I don't know too many people that don't. You know, how can I be a little more comfortable, even as a devotee? so many years, the illusion, the Maya, is so strong. And Prabhupada warns us in so many places. Even he says, I pray. I'm afraid of Maya. And I pray not to be captured by the illusory energy. So if the most intelligent living entities are illusioned, then what chance do we have? What is our, you know, every day I think to myself, how can I be a little more comfortable, have a little more money, have a little more facility? Even if I want to do my service, I'm thinking like that. It just doesn't go away, because this material body is made up of those three gunas, those three modes, and they're operating, they're very strong, and they're not going away, because this is our what? This is our karma. Our bodies are our karma. In the West, we have terrible karma. You know, we may get some situation where we're born into some family that's got some money, but still our mental state is extremely agitated. If you hadn't noticed, people from outside India, of course that's true here too, but to a much greater extent, there is much agitation within the mind. So every moment is a choice, whether to serve Krishna or to serve Maya. And it doesn't matter if you've been a devotee for 8 minutes or 8 years. Yes, you can become more steady, nishta, you can become more steady as you progress. It is true, the process does work. Otherwise, I would have been long gone. Through the process of japa meditation, chanting your rounds, the Lord is giving some facility. He's interceding with your karma, and He is helping you invisibly. He's helping you advance. As Prabhupada said, how do you measure your advancement in Krishna consciousness? You don't get on a scale. Oh, I see now how much I've advanced. No, it's how much actually you have become free from material desires. And what are those material desires that we aspire after the most? They're the same opulences as those that are there in Krishna. Beauty, strength, intelligence, wealth, power, and even renunciation. Yes, that's also a material opulence, because through renunciation, through just like these Brahmins, their sacrifice, they're performing this very intense sacrifice on behalf of their king to obtain his material desire, which is a putra's son. What, you ever wonder, what is it within the human being, within the mother and within the father, that says, you know, I've been feeling lately that I want a son or a daughter. I want a child. From where does that arise? You know, when you think about it, it's a lot of work. It's a lot of money. It's a lot of time. It's a lot of effort. And in 20 years, they're gone. Now, there was a spiritual or a semi, there was actually a material reason for having a son in the past, because if you go to the planet, when you leave your body and go to the planet of the Pitas, of the forefathers, then you had a son that would make offerings and you would be able to eat something in those planets. There's so many different rituals for these things. But still, that was a material consideration, and it was a lot of work, and you weren't sure if that son, even if you were to have a son, maybe you were going to have 10 daughters, was going to actually perform those oblations for you. I'm not sure that we really fully comprehend why it is that we have this inner material desire to propagate our species. For someone like Prihvrat, or in the case of Maharaj Nabi, they had a duty, they had a dharma. They were some of the first living entities in this universe, and so they were given a order to propagate the species and to have a son. Now he, of course, given that he understood he had to have a son, why not have the best son? Just like Vasudeva and Devaki, they wanted, of course, to have the Supreme Personality of Godhead as their son. That's why they took that birth. It was a very expensive birth. They had to go through a lot of suffering, but they obtained their goal. But for us, what is it within us that wants us, that we want to propagate the species? There's already over 6 billion people on the planet. Do we need more? You have to really become a psychoanalyst, practically, to try and figure out what it is that makes people want to propagate this species, to have sons and daughters in this world. And the answer is actually quite simple. Because we believe that we will get some sense gratification from it. We'll get respect, we'll get service, we'll get some enjoyment. We don't think, I want to have a son or a daughter because I want to serve them. No, we think, oh, what a pleasure it will be to have this child. Just like King Chittaketu, he wanted a son so badly. So he got a son, and then the son was poisoned by his other wives, envious wives. And then he came back to his body to teach King Chittaketu a lesson. And when King Chittaketu was very happy that his son had returned to that body, the soul had returned to that body, the soul, who is now awake in that child's body, said, "Which father are you? I've had so many fathers. Which one are you?" And so then King Chittaketu could realize, oh, actually, this is not really my son. This is a soul that has come and is simply, I've called them back and giving them trouble. And so he understood that great rishis, Narada Rishi, and I think it was, they were both there, and they were able to help him through that lesson, that the soul is really nothing to do with that body other than having to live through that karma of that particular lifetime. So we're that separated energy. We're not that Vishnu Tattva. I'll continue reading. It's stated here that when a living entity gives up this material embodiment and enters into the spiritual world, he revives his spiritual body. And in his spiritual body, he can see the Supreme Personality of Godhead face to face. He can hear and speak to him face to face. And he can understand the Supreme Personality as he is. As far as bodily construction is concerned, there's no difference between the part and parcel living entities and the expansions of the Vishnumurti. In other words, at liberation, the living entity gets a spiritual body by the grace of the spirit of Supreme Personality of Godhead. The words, Mama Vanshaha, fragmental parts and parcels of the Supreme Lord, are also very significant. The fragmental portion of the Supreme Lord is not like some material broken part. See, this is a misconception of the impersonalists, the Mayavads. They think all the broken parts were like little fragments, and we can all just fit together and become one, as if there was something broken and it was glued back together. But this fragment is not materially conceived. It's not like matter, which can be cut into pieces and joined together again. That conception is not applicable here because the Sanskrit word sanatan, eternal, is used. The fragmental portion is eternal. It's also stated in the beginning of the second chapter that in each and every individual body, the fragmental portion of the Supreme Lord is present. Dehina Osminyata Dehe. That fragmental portion, when liberated from the bodily entanglement, revives its original spiritual body in the spiritual sky, in a spiritual planet, and enjoys association with the Supreme Lord. It is, however, understood here that the living entity, being the fragmental part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, is qualitatively one with the Lord, just as the parts and parcels of gold are also gold. You know, the example Prabhupada gives in another place is that of gold earrings. They're made of gold, but they're not chunks of gold. They're not the whole gold. They're just made of the gold. So that's our nature. What a relief when you think that you actually have the same quality constituting you as that which constitutes that beautiful personality of Godhead Krishna. Because now you're mentally, you can begin to learn to be free from the bodily conception. As long as you don't understand the distinction, you are forever in a prison, a samsara, a cycle of birth and death, because you don't accept the fact that at the time of death, you have the opportunity, if you have led a life which gives you the memory to have Krishna on your tongue, in your ears, in your mind, to remember Krishna at the time of death, that will liberate you. Prabhupada, in so many places, makes this absolutely an imperative, that at the time of death, whatever you're thinking, whatever your mind, wherever your mind is, to that place you will go. If you're thinking of your favorite dog or cat, your child, whatever, you will, that consciousness will carry you to your next birth. So the time of death is what we're preparing for in this life. It's a final exam. It's no different than being in school and then having your 4 years of education, but you have to pass one test, otherwise you have to continue with your schooling. That's death. And life is the opportunity every day to prepare for that. The beauty is that it's made so simple for us in this age of Kali, because in previous ages it was much more difficult. You had to be so austere, and you had to meditate for such a long time, and you had to restrain your senses completely from any sense gratification. In this age, the age of Kali, we are extraordinarily fortunate, although you might not think it when you walk out those gates and see what a mess the world is. But the beauty that we see as devotees is that the process of Harinam Sankirtan, this very simple chanting, minimum 16 rounds a day, that's for an initiated devotee, right? 16 rounds minimum. Minimum, by the way, it's minimum, minimum. Doesn't mean you can't chant more. I know there's one person who's been staying at this temple. He's chanting 64 rounds every day. Wonderful. One time my wife went to a japa retreat. She set the record. She loves to chant. My wife loves to chant the Maha Mantra. I think that's why I married her, because I figured if I can just be in the same proximity of a person that loves chanting so much, maybe some of it will rub off on me. I'm still waiting. She chanted 163 rounds in one day. I don't know. How many did Haridas Thakur chant? Ah, she missed 182 by just a few rounds. She'll get another chance. So, in this age, we have a very special disposition to be able to do this chanting. And, of course, along with that, we recommend the four regulated principles. And why they're recommend it is because they're actually a byproduct of the japa. They will, even if you can't give up some intoxication or some sex life or something, if you add that chanting to it, automatically, in due course of time, these things will be shed like the skin of a reptile. You'll leave it. I loved, absolutely adored fried onions. They were so good from a fast food chain. We just love to go in and get those fried onions. I cannot stand the smell of any fried onions today. How is that possible? Prabhupada said, by measuring, how you measure by how much you don't have material desire for things. Of course, naturally with age, certain things you would think would go away. But in my life, I'm 64, I haven't seen much go away. My eyes, if I don't cover them, they'll still look around for beautiful women, and my taste will still be there for some things that I shouldn't have, and my mind will be still meditating on certain things unless I draw it back to devotional service. Just because you're getting older, I've met even older devotees who are very, very wealthy, obscenely wealthy. And they just, you know what they want to do at age 70? What's their desire? To make more money. There was this one devotee, I wanted to recommend to him a book. It's called, very good book. It was written in the 90s. It was called Live Rich, Die Broke. This is like Prabhupada's formula for us. He told us with Lakshmi, you should spend it as fast as you get it. He understood the power of that attraction to hoard money. And I see that people who get older, many, not all, but many people, just like it says in the Gita, more and more they want. More and more money they want to accumulate. They may give some to the temple, but Krishna doesn't look so much at what you give. What does he look at? He looks at what you're keeping. How much are they keeping? It's my money. One film we're going to remake. We're going to remake this film, Yehi Hai Zindagi. It's a beautiful film. It was a big hit. Have you seen? And so there's the man, he believes, it's played by Sanjay Kumar. Sanjay Kumar. So he believes that, he makes a bet with Krishna. He says, you let me win that lottery, and I'll prove to you that money can buy happiness. I can feed my kids, I can send them to school, I can get a nice place to live, all these things I can create, just you arrange it for me, and I'll show you. Of course, what happens in his life is that he loses everything. He loses his family, he loses his health, he loses his wealth, people cheat him, his daughter, I won't say, so many things happen. And Krishna keeps coming into his life and offering him suggestions, which are verses from Bhagavad Gita practically, but he can't listen until finally he's smashed. In the end, he finally surrenders to Krishna. So this is what happens. We go through our lives. We're almost testing God. Like Hiranyakashipus, small Hiranyakashipus, small Ravanas. We want to test, I can be powerful, I can be so great. Even in my old body, you see some of these wealthy guys in their 70s and 80s, and they're pushing on with their material sense gratification. Examples come to my mind. I don't even want to mention their names in our temple or what they do. It's so debauched. This is the disease of the Vinamsa, the separated energy, that we are marginal, like that example I gave of the sand, that we every day must affirm who we're being until it becomes such a habit that we begin to truly believe it, that our mind becomes trained. Otherwise, we'll be chanchala, flickering. The mind will be flickering constantly. It takes, just like any sport, if you're training for some sport, you have to be disciplined. You have to train your muscles. Gradually they will surrender. But gradually the mind, which is our greatest enemy or our greatest friend, it will surrender. It takes time and it takes discipline. When you're exercising enough, you will say you're learning, you're running, you're jogging. Eventually the body will call you. Let's go running. You won't have to say to the body, come on, we gotta go out there and exercise. No, the body actually says, let's go. And it becomes really actually a pleasure after some time. So similarly in spiritual discipline, in the beginning, what it first tastes like nectar at the end, in sense gratification, and it first tastes like nectar at the end is like poison. But in the spiritual life, even if it tastes a little poisonous in the beginning, it will be like nectar at the end. That's when you begin to come to the higher stages of prema, of spontaneous raganuga bhakti, or spontaneous love of Krishna. It is a process. Don't think, oh, just because now I don't experience full-time love, feelings of ecstasies, crying when I chant Jaya Radha Madhava prayers, as Prabhupada sometimes did, with tears that would come out of his eyes and many meters, they would squirt, some devotees reported, out of his eyes, just ecstatic symptoms of love of God. They're waiting for us. They're just around the corner. This life is very, very short. When the bell tolls, it tolls for thee. A very famous line in English literature. When the bell tolls, it tolls for thee. And what is that bell that's ringing? It's time. It's that kala. It's inexorable. And it won't stop. We see it in our faces as we get older. Oh my God, this time is passing. Am I using this form of life in a way that is going to benefit me at the time of my death? That's what Prabhupada's given us as a context for everything we do. Everything has meaning because it is ultimately aimed at remembering Krishna and never forgetting Him. That's the topmost instruction that we can be given. How to remember Krishna and never forget. We're here for only one reason. We're now here. We're here because we're envious of Krishna and left. But we're here now for only one reason, that we forget how wonderful it is to be a servant of Krishna, in relationship with Krishna. And that's why Prabhupada created so many extraordinary activities for us to perform, to spread Krishna consciousness. I'm a filmmaker. Prabhupada wrote me, make films for Krishna. Yadava is a filmmaker. He wrote, make Krishna conscious films the most popular. So that becomes the watchword of our life. Just as for Prabhupada, he had this instruction from Bhaktisiddhanta to preach in the Western countries. He wasn't able to do it right away. But for him, it was a constant reminder of his duty to his guru. So if we're very fortunate, we'll get some instructions In the beginning, there are more general instructions. Well, you come to the temple, or make prasad, offer, hear the prayers, how to do, you know, gradually associate with devotees, come to the functions for single or men. You can even join the temple, do some service. There's so many things that Prabhupada has created, and now that's expanded by the mercy of so many Vaishnavas into so many variegated services. And they're all designed for just one purpose: to remember Krishna and never forget Him. Of course, when we say remember Krishna, really, for those of us who understand this, really it's remember Radha. Because we're actually wanting to facilitate Radharani. That's the inner meaning of serving Krishna. You know, in Vrindavan, everyone you meet on the street, they're chanting Jai Radhe, Jai Radhe. And when Prabhupada was there with the devotees, he said he liked that very much, because he understood, more than any of us obviously, that it is that Radharani's pleasure. She is the greatest servant of Krishna, and we are the dasanu dasas. We are the servants of the servants of the servants. So let us be of great service to the greatest servant, and to the servants of that greatest servant. So even when we're distributing books, we're actually helping the living entities in their service to Radharani, making those tasteful arrangements as we sing in the samsara prayers. The spiritual master is making tasteful arrangements for the conjugal pastimes of Radha and Krishna. So even by giving Krishna in the form of books or preaching or prasad, we're actually participating in that pastime of making tasteful arrangements for the pleasure of Radha and Krishna. And that gives great pleasure to the soul. There's no greater pleasure than having someone say, remember you preached to me at your house at such and such a time? Well, now I'm initiated by so and so, and I'm doing this service. Frankly, those of you who know, there's not a greater pleasure in the world. You feel completely satisfied that somehow you are, in your own small way, able to participate in that pastime of that soul coming so sincerely into the circle of devotional service. And I don't know how many of you have not had that experience, but if you hadn't, just make somehow an arrangement to be able to share Krishna. As Prabhupada said, whomever you meet, that doesn't matter who, tell them about Krishna. It's a wonderful way to do things. I mean, we have devotees. Jaya Dwaita just went to Egypt about a month or two ago. Egypt. Why? Whomever you meet, tell them about Krishna. Now there's some people there becoming Krishna conscious. There's still so many frontiers right here in India. There's how many millions of villages? Mayavadism, impersonalism is spread throughout the Bharatvarsh for so many centuries now. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to be a dike against the flood of impersonalism. And instead he showered mercy on everybody to be able to give them this full understanding of what is their actual position and who is Krishna. So we have that legacy. We have that order. Because when the spiritual master, when you accept the idea of being a disciple of a spiritual master, you are in the parampara. So that acceptance of being in the parampara means you have to be a guru. There's no parampara that can continue without a disciple becoming a guru. So it's your job to become guru. You may be not Diksha guru, maybe Shiksha guru, which, by the way, are equally extolled in the scripture. They're equally as good. The diksha is a formality, according to Shastra. So our job is to actually be guru, to people and give them the mercy of this Vaishnava philosophy. And that makes a mission in life. That gives you a goal. Prabhupada told us, without ambition, there's no life. You have to have ambition. Make that ambition a spiritual ambition. Isn't it? Why not? What else is there to do? There's really nothing going on here in this world. There's just a bunch of machines interacting. Only when you come in relationship to Krishna is there some reality. Otherwise, as Krishna says, everything's as a machine made out of the material energy. Nobody's home. Nobody's there. They're buried under their three modes, the gunas. They're just thinking, I'm in a movie, that's all. They're thinking they're in the movie. But they're not, they're just watching the movie. We're just watching this life. There's nothing really happening. It's why there's not such importance in philanthropic activities from our side. What's the value of just oiling a machine? No, we want the soul is there deep inside, and it needs jeev jago, wake up, sleeping soul. That's our mission. That's why we have loud cymbals and drums. We're waking you up. That's why our kirtans, when they're taken in the streets, they're so noticeable. Hello? Ever see the look on people's faces when they see us coming down the street with our dancing and our drums and our hands in the air? They come alive. They become awake. What is that? That's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That's his plan, to wake up everybody. And he figured, sound vibration, cymbals, mridanga, whatever else you can use. Yes, we're bothersome. Society sometimes thinks we're agitating them. That's a fact. Well, we are. Even in Russia, you know, they look at our books and they say, oh, you see, this is socially unacceptable what he says in this purport. This is social revolution. This should be struck from these books. We can't have this in our society. Those people who are looking at that in Prabhupada's books, reading his purports, they're the smartest guys in the room. Because they know that's exactly what Prabhupada's doing. They're correct to go in. If they want to keep their society asleep, they're correct to try and get those books buried somewhere, not in circulation. These books, this Bhagavad Gita, what do we call it? The Srimad Bhagavatam, what do we call it? The light of the Bhagavat. The deep. This is the light. Light means what? Get up. See, look, wake up. You can't sleep on the lap of Maya forever. You know why? Because Krishna loves you too much. He's going to come. Again and again I come, he says in Gita, to deliver the pious. He'll come. He'll wake you up. He will take you away. So why suffer more? Why not take seriously this wonderful movement? Krishna consciousness. So, I thank you very much. I just wanted to tell all the, particularly the devotees who are living here in Juhua, how welcome I felt. I've been here almost over 2 months now, and it's been one of the highlights of my devotional life. The devotees here are so nice. And the visitors are also very nice, and I feel very humbled by the hospitality that they've offered me. And myself and Yadabar were trying very hard to get this project of putting Krishna conscious movies into the theaters. And your mercy and hopes for our continued endeavor, and perhaps, if Krishna wills it, the success will be very much appreciated. So if there's any questions or comments. Yes.
When we generally pray Krishna or Lord Vishnudeva for protection, what kind of protection we are expecting from Krishna?
His question is, when we pray to Krishna or Lord Nrisimhadeva or any of the incarnations for protection, what kind of protection are we actually praying for? It's an excellent question, and one I've had before. And you know, when devotees get in a car, okay, let's chant the Nrisimha prayers, right, for protection. Well, if we're thinking about protecting this material body, I'm afraid that we're probably asking Krishna for the wrong thing. What we want to be protected is that if anything should happen, please protect me that I will always remember you, and that I always will take shelter of you, that I will surrender to you more and more. That's the protection we pray for. We don't pray for anything material. We don't, you know, some people bless a car, and they bless a house, and they bless this, and they bless that. Those blessings, what's the value of any material blessing? Nothing. It's just more karma. The only thing to pray for, there's only one thing to pray for, that I can become a more sincere devotee of the Lord. That's the only thing that's worth praying for. And then may I say, that I can serve the Vaishnavas. That's worthy of praying for. And everything else, I don't even know why people bother. Especially as devotees. I don't know why we bother praying for God. Krishna, please, I want this service. I don't want that service. Or, you know, please protect my mother. She's sick in her bed with a this and that, and make her better. I think we should be praying simply that we surrender to Krishna and we learn how to never forget him in any circumstance. That's my own understanding of protection. Thank you very much. Have a wonderful day in Krishna consciousness. Hare Krishna.